CFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptor here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 167, recorded September 4th, 2015. I am your host, Deron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf, 1975. Along with me is Maroni Prime, Jim Black.
Hello.
Joining us very shortly will be Rick Alvarez. He's running a little bit late, but he should pop in very shortly. And I want to extend a very special welcome to a very esteemed guest of ours, Mr. Paul Eiding. Woo-hoo. Welcome to TFYLP.
Hey, welcome.
Happy to be here.
You may recognize his voice from many, many different genres and properties, such as Perceptor, of course, from Generation 1 here in Transformers, Grandpa Max in Ben 10, and Colonel Campbell in the Metal Gear Solid series, as well as some other things. We'll speak a little bit about that very shortly. And also, if you were a longtime listener to this show, at least for the last last 100 episodes or so, he's also the voice of our show in the intro and everything. So finally able to have you on. I know scheduling and timing is always tricky, but it's a pleasure to have you on.
I'm really happy to be here, Deron. Yeah. Since we met all those years ago, when was that?
I believe it was BotCon 2010, I believe.
That was my first con.
Mm-hmm. In Orlando.
First convention ever or just first BotCon?
First convention ever.
Wow.
Yeah, I have two daughters, and while they were still home, I decided I wasn't going to be running around, so I stayed home. I even stopped doing, taking films in, out of town unless they were going to send all of us. Yeah, but then they went to college, so heck, they're gone. Time for me to have some fun and meet folks.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my first one.
Absolutely. It was 2010 was a great show down in at Disneyland in Orlando, if I recall correctly. And then the following year was in Pasadena, and you actually attended that one as a fan, did you not?
I came as a fan. Well, what happened was when I met folks at 2010, I had friends who said, "Oh, you got to stop by. You got to come. You got to say hi." And when fans asked me to do that sort of thing, it was right here in town. It's like, why not? So I got together with some friends from the UK, from across the states, So I came as a fan, and then I was coerced into joining one of the panels with a bunch of guys.
Nice.
Which is fun.
Yeah, it's always great to join in on those things. I the last few BotCons I've went is either a dealer helper or in just a limited capacity, and I haven't even been able to attend most of the panels probably the last two or three years. And I think that's one of the downfalls of actually going in that capacity. You don't get to enjoy the whole con. You know, it's everything is right there in the dealer room. And like this year up in Chicago, I wanted to actually have a chance to meet Sue Blue and John Machida. Both of them were there, and they actually had the autograph tables like in 2010 right there in the dealer room. Mm-hmm. And they were literally 40 feet away from the table that I was working at, but the timing and everything, I just wasn't able to get over there. And then Frank Welker.
Wow.
I mean, the special thing that they had set up for him at the awards dinner, that he came out and, addressed us as Megatron. That was special.
Oh, that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the best. He's just not just an incredible talent, but he's just a good guy. He's just, you know, we're very lucky because, you know, most of the guys, let me think, are there any jerks that were on the Transformers? I can't think of any jerks, except maybe me. I'm not really sure. But everybody's really good, especially Peter and Megatron, which is interesting because, you know, to be that evil and alternately to be that sweet, such a good man, it just shows what an actor he is, you know?
He's also credited with a lot of voices in just Transformers alone. And Generation 1, he was like, I think the first season, he was like 3/4 of the Decepticon army.
Yeah, he was the go-to guy, you know?
Yeah.
You need another voice? Okay, Frank's here.
You know,
come up with something new.
And the thing is that sometimes you can tell it's the same guy, but other times with him, some of the times I didn't even know Rumble was Frank Welker until I was an adult. I'm like, mind blown. Yeah. It just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Before we go on, and before we
wait, I got to say one thing about Sue Blue as well.
Okay,
Sue is an incredible director as well as voice talent. She got to direct the last incarnation of Ben 10, Omniverse. Sue directed all of those, and I had such a great time because we go way back. We've done other things besides the Transformers. In fact, there's a little snippet on my commercial voiceover reel that everything is new except for one little bit. And it was a bit that she and I did that I can't let go of. It's still on there. And we did that, oh my gosh, probably 25 years ago, maybe 28 years ago, where we played boyfriend, girlfriend. I just love Sue. I just wish she was invited and was able to go to more cons because she's got so much to share.
She's one of the ones that's on my top bucket list that I would love to meet. Her RC was just such a memorable and powerful character there in season 3. I remember whenever the female Autobots first popped up in the Transformers series in season 2, I believe Morgan Lofting and a few of them had some voices. Their work was great, but I was having a hard time selling on the idea of girl robots.
Yeah.
But then season 3 came along, and I didn't get to actually see the animated movie until much later. I was actually an adult by the time I actually got to see it.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Seeing her in season 3 absolutely sold me on the female Autobots. You know, she was like right there in the fight with everything. She didn't act overly girly, you know, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but I mean, she was just she played it just right. And yeah. I loved her character, and it's great to see that she's butt. Yeah. And it's great to see that she's gone on and done a lot of voice directing, not just in other franchises, but also in the Transformers series as well. Transformers Prime, she did some of those.
I want to say it. I know she came back as RC in Animated in 2008. In Transformers Prime, I think she was going to voice RC, but she had some personal conflicts with schedules, so she ended up just retaining more of a supervisory role.
Right, right. That stuff happens. Mm-hmm. And don't bring up Animated to me, okay?
Oh, I know. I was heartbroken the instant I heard that.
So and was
the
I.
The instant I heard it, I'm like, what?
I missed something.
In that series, Perceptor was voiced by the software from Apple that is also utilized by the famous Stephen Hawking.
Oh.
So there was not an actual human voice for that character in that show.
Right. Okay, can I tell you a funny story?
Sure.
Okay. After we wrapped one of the seasons of Ben 10, we were all sitting around these picnic tables set outside this lovely tavern. We were all having a good time, having a beer, Coke, whatever, and noshing on a little food and whatnot. And I'm sitting there, and I don't know who I'm sitting across, and I'm asked the guys who are they? They are, and they were the guys who did all the music for Ben 10. I said, oh, well, what else have you done? They said, they mentioned a bunch of things. And then they said, and we did all the music for Transformers Animated. And I went into my, oh, don't talk about that to me. You're joking with them, but don't talk to me about that. And they said, why, what's up? I said, I'm Perceptor. And they immediately knew, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I said, who was responsible for that? They said, I don't know. The director, I don't know the director. And I said, well, who was the director? Well, it turns out it was the director for this season of Ben 10. So I went up to Matt. And I said, Matt, what's the story, man? You killed my career. You took my voice away. You gave it to a machine. How dare you? And of course, he's like, Paul, no, hey, Paul, no, come on. It wasn't me. It was the producer. I said, well, who's the producer? And it was also the producer of Ben 10 this year. So it was one of those deals where this whole crew that was working on Ben 10 had all, and writers, had all been writers and producers and directors for Animated. So we had a great laugh that night with me, with my faux anger of what they did to poor Perceptor. Well, I say that with tongue in cheek, but it's still, I wasn't happy with it.
Well, speaking of other voice actors from Generation One that's went on to voice direct, Michael McConaughey. He did, I believe, the Transformers Robots in Disguise series back in 2001.
I want to say, Armorhide.
He did that, and he also directed as well, I believe.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But
I don't like him. I've never liked Michael. I didn't go in and do any of those. I could have done another voice. But did he call me? No.
No.
No. No. And we get together and he acts like, oh, we're friends for life. Forget him.
BFFs, huh?
I always have to watch myself because I go on these rants joking. And then I always fear that someone has listened to a certain point and had to go off to do something, have dinner or whatever. And all they heard was, I can't stand Michael McConaughey. It's like, wait, no, it was a joke. It was a joke. Anyway, so I've got to watch myself.
we just got a post in our TFYLP Facebook group from Brian Johnson. Says, Paul, I'm going to quote Animated on this. This is why I hate machines.
Good man. Well, not there all machines, but that one, yes.
But Paul, your saving grace, though, to prove that you're kidding and everything, it's going to be on YouTube, and it's going to stay on YouTube. So hey, all you got to do is just go back and watch the YouTube video. It's right there. Watch the whole thing. Don't take it out of context. It's all right there. So, but
context is always important.
Indeed. Yes.
But before we go on, I want to give a little blurb for our sponsors, CapturedPrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service, CapturedPrey.com, as well as Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your cost with Mega Toy Fan. You can catch Mega Toy Fan at your local conventions, such as TFCon coming up in Charlotte, North Carolina very soon. And speaking of conventions, we have some enormous news that just broke a couple hours ago. Yes.
No way.
BotCon, the official Transformers Collectors Convention, has announced that BotCon 2016 will be right here in where I'm located at, in the Louisville, Kentucky area, at the Galt Hotel, April 7th through 10th. Woo-hoo. So it's going to be early in the year, and we know where it's going to be. So from what I understand, registrations will be going up probably around the first of the year. But you can already book your hotel for the Galt Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky in April of 2016 for BotCon. That's huge news.
And do it now. Don't wait.
Don't wait.
Every year somebody gets stuck.
You know, I've been to a bunch of BotCons, and I absolutely love going to the show. It's always really expensive, but you know, the one in, I believe it was 2006, the one that was in Lexington. I mean, it was like 20 miles away. Whenever I lived in that area, and I was able to stay at home and still attend the entire convention. That was great. And I'll be able to do it again this year.
In fact, if you need a place to stay, just call Duran Land. Yeah. He has plenty of room. Just come on over.
just hopefully you're not allergic to cats.
too can visit Duran Land. Just make sure to bring your passport.
Oh, oh, that was a terrible one, Jim. Terrible.
We'll laugh about it later.
So Paul, let's talk a little bit about your work on Transformers. Is there any stories you want to tell us that really stands out to you about your work on the series? How did you come to work on the series?
It was the way everyone else did. I had been doing I don't remember which one came first, whether the Littles came first, whether I was working on the Littles and then auditioned for the Transformers, or if the Transformers came. I don't remember which came first, the Littles or the Transformers.
But basically, the Littles.
The Littles? Okay, well, then that's why. Yeah, that's why I think Wally knew of me. I wasn't doing a character like that, but I was doing the bad guy's sidekick, kind of a weaselly doctor. And when I got the audition to come in and read for Perceptor, they basically said they wanted kind of a C-3PO, more of a absent-minded sort of professor type guy who's nice, brilliant, but not really into anything but science. And so I went in and I did what I did, and son of a gun, I got hired, you know? Simple as that. Which is not simple, of course, because I think we had two or three auditions before we got selected, you know? And the rest, as they say, is history. So I owe it to Wally Burr, you know?
You know, Perceptor is one of those that, if you look at the, if you talk to Hasbro and a lot of fans, you know, you got your top tier characters, Optimus Prime, Megatron, right. Bumblebee. They're always, Yeah, they're always the names that people think of when you think of Generation 1 Transformers.
Right.
But I always list Perceptor up there as one of the unsung heroes, the one of the characters that was always there that nobody seems to talk about as much for whatever reason.
Well, but,
I mean, they do. They do talk about him. You're not.
No, but I agree with you. Perceptor was, he's not, you know, come on. America likes big, tough heroes, you know? And we don't think about the thinkers nearly as much as we should be. It's mainly about the big, tough guys, you know?
Now, you know, Perceptor also transformed into a tank.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that was very seldomly shown in the show, actually.
Very seldom.
But was that actually in the show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Kind of
was.
Okay.
Someone joining in. Ah, it's Brett.
Hey. Yeah,
Rick just messaged me. He can't make it tonight. But we have a substitute in Brett.
I am happy to be a substitute.
A talking mouth. Your camera is a little bit low there.
It's Whistler's commercial.
Now see, better. There we go. Yeah. Now the top of your head.
Am I showing up here too? Or?
Yes. Yeah, you're okay.
You're fine. Are fine. It was all my doing. It was all me. So.
Now I see the top of your head.
Yeah. Well, at least here. Ready?
Cool.
The problem is that I'm super hyper and I will bounce around and everything, so I have to adjust accordingly.
Got it. Cool. Yeah, you're perfect now.
There we go. Good.
Yeah.
But
all I can say is wow. And before anyone says anything else, here we are, Perceptor. I don't care what they do, robotic, whatever. You, man, are Perceptor.
Thank you, man. I appreciate
it. Without a doubt. I grew up and yeah, that you were Perceptor.
You know, the cool thing we were talking about why Perceptor isn't, and to be honest, even myself, you know, I always consider Perceptor as like, you know, because he didn't get a lot of the, you know, the hoopla. He was kind of, you know, more boring character compared to, you know, Optimus and Autobots and all that sort of stuff. But when I start hearing stories from folks about what number one the show meant to them when they were young and what Perceptor meant to them, especially the folks who tell me stories of how when they were young, for whatever reason, they couldn't physically get out and run and play all those tough games like everybody else. They had to use their minds. They were in either a wheelchair or in with crutches and whatnot, that they focused on Perceptor because he was the thinker. And so they started using that. And I've heard several stories that just blew me away and brought me to tears. And often we get wrapped up in what we're doing day to day, actors. And you hope that people care about what you're doing and you hope that you're making an impact. But a lot of times you just do it and you think, okay, well, it's a cartoon. And you walk away. But I've been taught lesson after lesson after lesson, and I will never forget it. And that I appreciate. I don't want to get all maudlin, but it means a lot to us. Well, I can talk for myself. It means a lot to me when I meet, you know, fans of the show or fans of my work or of a particular character. I never say fans of me because it's like they're fans of what I do, you know, my work. You know what I mean? And that helps me keep my head from filling the screen. You know?
Well, I was just adjusting my camera so my head wouldn't be as big as the screen. I did have one thing to ask you, though.
Yeah.
I'm actually, and before I get booed big time, I am a huge Star Trek fan. And I actually attribute you more towards Scotty. And I remember a letter that was sent to James Dugan about someone that wanted to go through, I think it was technical college or whatever, and they based their whole career on his role in Star Trek. And that's kind of how I see you. I think that you got a lot of people that grasped the show and took your role. And, you know, maybe we have some, you know, some scientists and some people that are doing great things based upon what you did. I really believe that.
I know it's true. I'll give you a name. Michael Giordano. I don't think he minds me mentioning his name.
Well, if it's not, we can just, you know, blurt it out later, but that's okay.
Okay. He mentioned to me that very thing, that for some reason he focused on Perceptor and the scientists. He, you know, I don't remember why, but he just loved Perceptor and the way he thought, and he decided that that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to study. He wanted to become a scientist. Well, and he said, and that's what I've been doing. I've done this my whole life now. When they did the last shuttle launch, right before they did it, they pulled it away from the towers so people who worked on the shuttle could take pictures. So what Michael did, he took his Perceptor and put it on the ground, did a forced perspective to show that Perceptor almost the same size as the last shuttle, and he took the picture and sent it to me on Facebook. And he said, Paul, I just want to let you know, see that I wasn't telling you an untruth. He was a test engineer on the shuttle for NASA.
Fantastic.
And it's like, okay, all right, job done. I'm a happy man. And that's still, the picture is somewhere. If you scroll through my pictures on Facebook,
you started out as a voice actor, and you encouraged someone to do that. Just based upon one of the jobs that you had.
Yeah.
One of the characters that you portrayed. I mean, that's got to make you feel great.
Are you kidding? That's why I do what I do. That's it. And when you meet little ones, I just came back from Australia at a con. I was brought over there mainly for the Transformers. There are a bunch of Gen 1 fans in Mackay, which is between Brisbane and Cairns, which is way up at the top of Australia. And these folks would come there with their little ones, and some of the little ones were big fans of Ben 10, so I had both generations. But there was a couple of dads who said, yeah, she likes Ben 10, but she's a Gen 1 fan. And the little girl started quoting lines to me. And it's like, are you kidding me? And they were, she was just overjoyed. So I did the voice, and I watched her face just light up. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's it.
Mr. Riding, if I can ask a question. My name's Rick. I just joined the chat. I got here a little late.
How you doing?
Hi. It's surreal to talk to you, so thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
But, you know, like 25 years ago, 30 years ago, you're working on these TV shows. Do you ever think that someone could walk up to you and say, hey, I'm 35. Perceptor was one of my favorite toys as a kid. I love the TV show. I love the Transformers movie. And now, personally, I play the DVDs of Transformers, He-Man, Thundercats, all that stuff in my van while I'm driving with my girls in the back. And they love it. And my four-year-old just runs around screaming the Transformers theme song. how does it feel like, I mean, did you think back then you would ever have an impact on pop culture like that? And then
yes, I did. I do from the first words spoken from my mouth that it was going to be an epic series that would last forever.
And
I knew it. Somehow, I don't know, a muse came to me and said, this is going to last your life. No.
Well, how does it feel knowing that your work, I mean, not every show is on DVD, and not every show has a fan base that's as strong or as big 20, 35 years later. Not every brand has that. But how does it feel knowing that, you know, four-year-olds today are getting to see your work all over again?
It's incredibly humbling, and I mean that sincerely. It just, every time, it blows me away. When a little one comes up and can recite lines. I did a con in Texas, San Antonio, Alamo City Comic Con. Mm-hmm. Great con. And there was a gentleman who was 39 years old. He was there with his little one. And he said, "Man, I got to tell you, you made me cry when I was a little one." I said, "What?" He said, "When you said that line in the movie about Optimus, I lost it. I couldn't stand it." And it was the first time ever that we'd killed off a hero in an animated thing like that. Mm-hmm. And I just said the line. I said, "Oh, you mean when I said, I fear the wounds are fatal." And he teared up. This 39 with his little one there. It took him right back.
Oh, I'm almost tearing up right now.
I actually wanted to ask you.
You still have it. You still have that voice, man.
Well, I did want to ask you that. When you were given the script for that, and I don't know if this was asked or not, when you were given the script for that and you looked at that, what were you thinking?
Are you kidding? It was like, what? No, you can't kill Optimus. What the heck are you thinking?
I mean, you're talking about in the 80s, you've got all these heroic icons, you know, whatever you want to be, you know, He-Man, Thundercats,
G.I. Joe,
all this. G.I. Joe, all that. And then, and we're not going to get into G.I. Joe because they followed suit, but we're going to do that.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, all of a sudden, we're going to take the main star, the main character, and we're going to kill him. And oh, by the way, you got to tell the audience. You got to tell everyone. This is it.
No pressure.
Exactly.
It really was. It's like, and that's one thing we did think about. It's like, oh my gosh, what are the kids going to think about this? Yeah, because it hadn't happened before.
Right. So, I mean, how do you do it? Do you play it? You know, do you play it corny? Do you play it like a joke? Do you do serious?
Oh, got it. You know,
serious.
Yeah. Whenever I do anything, to me, I'm an actor. I've been a stage actor first. I still work on stage. I do film. I had an audition today for Modern Family. So I still do all of it. And so when I approach something like that, especially Perceptor, I got to do it straight. I mean, my God.
But that was your first choice in that venue as a children's cartoon?
What do you mean, my first choice?
Well, you said that's how you perceived it, that you would go straight, you know, very, very serious. But it's still a kid's.
Well, the thing is
you did they try and pressure you? I mean, did they? Idea to do that dramatic? I mean, I can't believe they would have thought it was that monumental.
Well, you also that would happen. You also have to do whatever the director says, you know?
Sure,
You give what the director is asking you for. And I knew the weight of the moment. I knew the gravity. I knew what it meant. Now, you know, a more crass person or a more cynical person would say, well, it's just because they wanted to sell more toys, which is, of course, you know, they want to bring out more toys for the next season, whatever. Yeah, sure. But you don't think those things in the moment. In the moment, you're there, you have to say the line, and you know how huge this is.
Sure.
That your hero, Perceptor's hero, my gosh, Optimus is, he's got to do it straight.
We got to go back to what we starting off with earlier. You know, That brings to light, you know, they were killing off a lot of characters in the movie to sell more toys, but as far as the storyline goes, introduce more characters.
Right. Yet
Perceptor, going back to what we were talking about earlier, even though a lot of people, you know, Perceptor is not exactly one of the first characters a lot of people talk about when they talk about Transformers Generation 1, but when you stop and think about it, Perceptor, beginning in Season 2, was a staple for much of the entire Generation 1 series line.
I'm pretty sure he was in every episode.
Pretty much, yeah. And I mean, it's like in season 2, he was the brainchild that had all these little gadgets. I mean, he basically took over what Wheeljack was doing in season 1 and took it a little bit further. And then in season 3, he was that logical ground that the Autobots had. Everybody was always, you know, you had your comic relief in Grimlock, voiced by the incomparable Greg Berger. I mean,
another one I don't like.
And then you had Ultra Magnus, you know, the stoic leader type, and then Hot Rod, the guy, Rodimus Prime, the guy unsure of himself.
Like Perceptor says, it takes more than muscle to win a fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what more can you? Okay, we're going to fight more. We're going to do this. We're going to, you know, and fight some more. You got to come up with something else going on.
But I think that's one of the things that always made me gravitate to Perceptor as a favorite character, simply because he always approached things from the logical, informed, intelligent perspective. Mm-hmm. And he was just the character that you endeared to in every episode. At least me, as a geek, I latched onto Perceptor immediately because of, you know, by default. I mean, he's a nerd. I mean, he even was treated as such.
Yeah.
But if you think about how many episodes was it Perceptor, by using his intellect, saved the day. Cosmic Rust, he comes up with Coruscant, you know, and
he saves Megatron too.
Yeah.
In that weird way, you know.
Well, I happen to think of one thing, not to backtrack too much, but going back to what we were saying regarding, you know, the death of Optimus Prime in 86, that just got me thinking, even though that was kind of a buzzkill for the most part, at the same time, it was, even if in some small way, a golden opportunity to address the concept of death to children in a way that they could relate to.
You froze there for a while.
Sorry about that.
You froze at a good time, though.
Did you hear me okay, though?
No.
You froze.
Wow. Sorry. let me start again, then.
So, yeah.
About the death of Optimus, a lot of people, you know, refer to it as kind of the buzzkill that it was. But you know, something else that occurred to me was even if in some small way, it was also kind of a golden opportunity to address the concept of death in to children in a way that they could relate to. And one thing that came to mind was it's vaguely similar is how in Sesame Street in I believe it was like 81 or 82. Mr. Hooper, the actor had actually passed away, and they actually addressed that and tied that in a way to kind of teach children about death, and you know they did so in such a way where you know they didn't necessarily come out and say the actor died on screen, you know, referring to that, you know, as if it were the character. But I mean, you could see it. You know, the emotions in those actors' eyes; those were all real and genuine.
You betcha. You know?
And I think that made it so much more special. And I think that even, like I said, in the smallest way, your role in Perceptor in that moment, in that scene, had somewhat of a same bearing.
I think at that point in my life, I hadn't thought about this. But I had lost one, two, three people who were close to me in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really interesting, you know, that you're saying that, because it hadn't occurred to me, but I'm sure it had some effect on me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's probably one of the reasons why I had to deliver it the way I did. Wow. Now you're going to bring it all back up.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, to change the subject a little bit, it kind of my question now ties kind of into the acting process. I know different production companies do things differently, where they might have the whole cast in one room, or they might have everyone record their parts individually. What do you think you most enjoy? Do you like being with the ensemble? Do you like doing it individually? Or does that depend really on the role that you're playing?
I want to be with the other actors. That's, you know, that's, I understand the other way. I truly do understand it. Today when I was working, and yesterday when I was working on another one, it was all by myself. But I prefer working in the room with everyone. Because there's more spontaneity. You can control things. The director can control things more when you're by yourself. But there's an I think an honesty and you feed off of one another when more people in the room. We were lucky back then. We were all there, you know, almost all the time. Every once in a while, somebody would be missing because of other work or conflicting jobs and whatnot. But most of the time we were all there. And sometimes it makes things go longer because there's a lot more laughter, which is also what makes the job so much fun. But for an actor, I want to be there. I want to be inspired by other people. I want to be challenged by somebody else. You know what I mean? I want to, that give and take is really important. So that's my preference. That'll always be my preference because I'm used to being on stage, you know.
Well, go ahead, Rick.
Well, was the process the same for the movie as it was recording Transformers, or Transformers? You had everyone in the room. Was the film the same way?
Movie. Everybody was there. Who was in particular scenes? There were times when Judd Nelson was there. Mm-hmm. There was times when, depending upon who was in whatever scene, they would try and set it up so you're not all sitting around doing nothing. But we were all in the room. The only one who really worked by himself all the time was Orson Welles. We actually had to leave the studio grounds before he came.
Wow.
And it was very cool because they always sent a limousine for him, but he never rode in the limousine. His wheelchair came in the limousine. And he came in his own car with his driver.
Wow.
So it was very cool. But great thing, one time we were working with Judd. The fact it was the first day. And Judd had not done voiceover. He hadn't done, he'd been on camera, you know, Breakfast Club and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the first day, we'd start a scene. And your natural tendency is if an actor is to your left or to your right, you want to talk to them over here. And every time you'd go back to there, and then the words would come and go on him. And finally they said, Judd, no, Judd, you can't do that. You got to stay on microphone. He said, man, guys, I'm sorry. I don't know what the F I'm doing here. But he learned it. You know, and he was, there was no star turn or any of that kind of stuff. Because he was a big shot back then.
Well, he was one of the Brat Pack, you know, so.
Yeah.
Tying into this, I've actually got a question here from a listener on Twitter. Nelson Sean asks, Paul Lighting, could you talk more about your part in the movie with Robert Stack, recording studio or anything? You have anything about Robert Stack?
I have absolutely nothing because for some reason I was never there when Robert was there, which really hurt because I was a big fan of his. And I don't remember him ever being there at the same time I was there for whatever reason. Conflict. Maybe he had it in his contract. I will not work with Paul Lighting.
So what you're saying is if you or anyone you know have any information on what it's like to record with Robert Stack, please contact TFYLP now.
But I've heard good things about the man. Sorry, Nelson. I wasn't in the room when he was there. You know, bummer.
Now with animation, is there, when a series wraps or a season wraps, do you have like do you have parties? Do people get together and they kind of celebrate the work they've done? Or is it like, all right, see you at the next job?
No, sometimes yes, sometimes no. When with Ben 10, we had a wrap party at the end of the first one. Then we had a wrap party after the third one. Nothing after the middle one. Either that or I wasn't invited, one or the other. But Transformers, no, I don't remember. I don't remember us doing anything like that. That's interesting. Yeah, the bums, they never got us together for anything.
You hear stories sometimes about like Scatman Crothers scatting, you know, doing his thing. Yeah. Between takes and stuff like that. And,
magic.
Chris Lotta, you know, he would pass gas really loud or burp or try to do something funny.
You never knew what to expect with Chris Lotta. You just never knew. He was, I think, a comic genius who, you know, just was just very, very sad. He left way, way too soon.
Mm-hmm. But Star Trek alum as well.
Aha! There were several who had been on Star Trek. I don't remember who he played, but he did a few episodes. Star Trek alum Harry, the guy who played Harry Mudd.
Roger C. Carmel. Yeah.
Roger C. Carmel. Mm-hmm. He was on. I forget who he did, but on. Transformers, but
Cyclonus.
There you go. That's right. Wait.
Since I was going to save it, but I'm going to ask you. I just got to know, because while it was still the Enterprise D, what was it like to be on the Enterprise? I just got to know. I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I would love to know what it was like.
The worst thing about that whole experience is that I didn't take a bunch of pictures. I felt like such an idiot that I did not do that. I was trying to be so professional and very, very cool about it, and didn't let my nerd come out. I slapped myself now. It's like, my gosh, I took pictures of me in the costume, in all the makeup and everything, in my dressing room. It's like, come on, Paul. Then I get those little screen captures. It was pretty cool. Meeting Picard was amazing. We only had one quick scene when I first arrived there with the other ambassadors, and it was he was such a class act. The whole experience was otherworldly.
I want to screen share this. There you are, in all your glory.
There I are.
Now, if I remember, was this taken? I mean, here's my geekdom coming out. Was this taken in 10 forward? Can you tell?
It looks like it was.
I think it was. I vaguely remember, but I remember seeing this, and I was just like, oh my God, that's Perceptor. There he is for all those naysayers. Perceptor was on the Enterprise right there.
But did he have a scene with Data?
It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Right?
Doesn't matter.
I don't know. I don't think it would have been compatible.
Here's how I look at it.
Actually, wasn't Data in 10 forward?
I'm pissed, all right? I wanted to be on the Enterprise, all right? I'm sorry.
Wasn't Data
out right now? I'm envious.
Going back to that, though, wasn't Data in 10 forward during that dinner scene where Troy was introducing you to all that
did you get to shoot with Brent Spiner?
No. All my stuff was with Troy.
There's worse people to be with.
Yeah.
So, it was a tough job.
You took one for the team, didn't you?
Here's the killer. I'm hanging out with her the entire time, and they're feeding me all these sweets and chocolates and good stuff. And figure this out. They paid me. I would have paid them.
Right.
I didn't tell them that then, but yeah.
Well, of course not.
Yeah, it was one of those, you know, pretty cool things. And here's what my joke is always, you know, well, it was the sixth season. Okay, season six of the show. So they've gone through every, just about every actor they can go through. They got to come to me sometime. The nice thing was that was my first, oh, that's right. That was my first audition.
Season 7.
That was my first audition for the show and to score. Cause I had friends who auditioned for the show 5, 6, 7, 8 times before they actually got on, you know, but that was my first audition. I was like, yeah, maybe.
So you kind of, you went with them with a puffy chest and said, see what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. See,
and see what I got, who I got to hang out with, and
yeah, that's right.
Eat goodies. Yeah,
so, it was exactly. Cool.
With every opportunity, with every job, there's always a fringe benefit of, hey, I got to do this, or I got to do this, or I got to do that. What do you think is the thing you've enjoyed the most, or that your inner nerd or your self, the most self gratifying thing that you got from like being on a certain set or working with a certain actor?
I mean, other than hanging with us, of course.
Oh, this is number one.
Of course. I mean, I know.
TFYLP is the creme de la creme.
I mean, I understand that. That goes without saying. But
you know, let me think here. That's a semi-serious question. And I'm basically a semi-serious guy. So as far as jobs, I did a movie with Eddie Murphy and oh God, what's his name? Oh my God, dear God, Arthur. Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore.
And,
yeah.
And I got to hang out with Dudley Moore, and who was a gentle, dear, dear man, and I was a huge fan of his, before he became a big star. With his comedy stuff. Brilliant man. I really loved working with him. Okay. Now, this is, I swear to God, this is the absolute truth. The thing that is most gratifying to me for everything that I've done is what I'm doing now. And that's going to the cons, getting invited to cons. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart, meeting fans and being able to travel places and being invited and having people tell me they love my work. God, I mean, that's talk about cream on the top. I mean, that's it, baby. Put some, and then the side thing of that is being able to meet other people. I'm meeting all these great artists and great comic book writers. And I'm getting to be more and more of a nerd because I just love their work. And then I get to meet people like Jason Momoa and hang out with him, and Shatner, who I've done four different cities with. George Takei, and all of them, you know. And then what's his name? Anderson, Richard Dean Anderson, you know. Meet all these people that I just loved watching, you know, and get to run around and spend weekends and spend a couple of weeks together traveling with these folks.
Well,
that's really pretty cool.
Well, you know? I do have to ask you one thing. And you know, I mean, William Shatner is like top on my list. So, I mean, once again, not only just being on the Enterprise, but, you know, you trumped me again. But anyway.
Okay, wait a minute. Before you go on, I'll tell you even what I did to Richard. To the man. So we get into the green room. We're there before the con starts. Okay, this is in Perth, Australia. We get into the con, and he comes in, and we walk by each other, and he says, hi. I said, used to piss me off. And
yeah, but he's used to getting that.
He said, what? Excuse me? And
he's
said,
used to getting that.
And he said, you mean for breathing? And I said, no, here's the reason is my wife and I had horses. I rode for a long time. And I had a registered quarter horse, and we kept them at a place called the Griffith Park, Equestrian Center. Okay, Well, he kept his horse there, too. Captain Kirk didn't just have a horse. He had a horse that was worth more than my house. And when he
man loves his horses.
And when he got on his horse, now this is, we're talking 25 years ago. He got on that horse. He looked, well, almost swore. He was so magnificent looking. I wanted to just pull him off of there and spit on him. It was like,
yeah, that's not getting you on board there, but I got you.
Yeah, I would just be finished doing a show, Western Pleasure. I felt like, hey, I look good in the seat. My horse's neck is tucked, looks like a knight on a, the horse, great, perfect form. I was feeling so good about myself. And then he would ride by. And then immediately I felt like crap. So I told him that story. And he said, Paul, it was all the horse. It's all the horse. The horse knew what to do, and my trainer. I'm just sitting there. I said, yeah, you were just sitting there.
Yeah, that's all you were doing. That's all.
He had one of these walking horses where the tail comes up and looks like he's rocking.
You have at least two guys here that are from Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
So, Oh, yeah. I understand that. But
okay, I'm sorry. I need to go on. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. But my question was, other than the fact that, you got to see the Enterprise and Kirk and, you were talking about all the great things.
Did I tell you that Troy and I were lovers for a while?
Huh?
Did I tell you that Troy and I were lovers for a while?
Oh. Okay, so there's three things. Okay, there's three things you got going on there. I mean, it's
okay, that's a lie.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's your fantasies. It doesn't matter. Anyway, but I was sitting there thinking about one of the episodes we did was about the conventions. And you were like, you were so happy about doing conventions, one of your best times. Have you come across a guy that just really, really smells?
What?
And you know what I'm talking about. Every convention has one. He comes up. He wants to be your best buddy. Here, sign my sleeve or whatever. And, he smells like a dumpster fire. Come on now. I mean, you had to have had that. Yes or no? Come on now. I can't be the only one.
No, the question is how many?
And okay, we'll go with how many because I know it's more than one.
At every con.
There you go.
At every con, there's at least one guy who has been in the furry costume for entirely too long.
Okay, so what I want, what I want, and please, just bear with me. For all our listeners, for TFYLP, please, as Perceptor, say, and I would say wash your ass, but however you want to say it, however you want to say it, to please use soap.
Yes. Cursory evaluation of your body, your body odor? Yes, would indicate that a good 4 to 7 hours of scrubbing with Ajax might perhaps help the aroma. Please.
Please make use of that 20 mule team.
All I can say is, I'm done. I am happy. I am a happy man here. Oh, my God. Out of everything we've said, if you don't take it from Perceptor, God willing. God willing.
This is why they need to offer convention exclusives inside the soap. So you have to use the soap in order to get the convention exclusive.
But then you have to take it out of the package.
No, it doesn't matter. Dual purpose.
No, what I was thinking, what actually someone said at a con, I forget where, somewhere in New Zealand, they were saying that what they should do with all they need to do, the guys who wear the real big costumes and have been sweating all day long, what they have to do is one of two things: either put a bay leaf under each arm so they smell like soup, or
better,
or install a couple of fabric softener sheets inside their costume, so at least it has kind of a flowery smell.
I'm sure you didn't But we actually had a couple of, and it usually comes around when we have you know, fairly big conventions and everything. We talk about these, we call them tips, but the kind of etiquette. And while you talk about those that are in cosplay, this, that, and the other, there are some that wear less that need to clean up more.
But see, I was trying to be kind. I was trying to give them a reason for being that way.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, my nose just lets it go, if you know what I mean. Yeah. So yeah. We've all been there, and I love the fact that you let them know it does offend. And, you know, someone comes up and, man, I'm your best fan, and I want it, you know, will you please sign this? And you're going, okay.
It's not that as much as the arm around you.
And then
it's on you.
Yeah.
I always have the fear. Seriously, I have the fear that the next person comes up, they're going to smell it and say, oh,
have
my
you
God.
Been eating onions? You
know what? That boy, man, he's a good guy, but, man, he stinks.
Exactly.
Yeah. I got you. I understand.
Self-preservation.
All right. Now, before
we've covered that.
Yeah, that's done.
Before we move on, I want to talk a little bit about some other things that he's been in besides Transformers, and we'll touch a little bit more on Star Trek, and then we'll go on to some of the other things. But before we move on, now is our chance for listeners who are listening for the Unite With Us giveaway. Last week we gave the first clue in the giveaway, and for the next 4 weeks after this one, we'll be giving another clue each week, and after 6 weeks, you'll answer give us the final answer via Twitter or Facebook, and we'll the first person to answer that correctly will be the winner. I do want to add that it would help if you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. That way, if you are the winner, it would be easier to contact you and get your information that way. The clue this week is foreign. Foreign is this week's clue.
Could you use it in a sentence, please?
Yes. This is a foreign object I'm going to hit you over the head with. WWF.
What it is four. No. 4 and 4 is 8.
No. 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie.
Four and four. There you go. But used it.
But yes, this week's clue is foreign. If you missed last week's clue, go and check out last week's show, episode 166. You can watch it on YouTube, or you can download it via iTunes, Stitcher, or tftalk.net. If you want to find out more information on the rules of the contest and things like that, look up Unite With Us giveaway on tftalk.net, and all information is there.
Right.
You will have a chance to win a complete Combiner Wars Minasaur that will include Breakneck and Blackjack in addition to all the other ones. So great prize, and that prize is presented or provided to us by our sponsor, Captured Prey. Again, great toys, great prices, great service. Check out CapturedPrey.com. So, Paul,
yeah.
Let's talk about Star Trek The Next Generation. You were in the episode Liaisons, and I was talking with you about it. This is a season 7 box set that came out on DVD a number of years back. Absolutely wonderful episode. Some of your friends from Generation 1, such as as we mentioned earlier, Chris Latta, he was a Packlid in one of the episodes. In the very first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Michael Bell was Grobbler Zorn.
Who I just spoke with right before I came on the air with you.
Wow.
Michael, yep. We're buds. Our daughters are near the same age, and although his daughter is just kicking butt, Ashley Bell, wonderful actress. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You know, Mike's a buddy.
Are there any other people from Generation One that you know of that wanted to be on Star Trek? That, like you alluded earlier, that you know you had some that were so jealous of you for getting the role, but they had tried and tried and tried. Who tried to get on and didn't get on?
Oh, you mean from the Transformers?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if Greg Berger ever got on.
You know,
too bad. Sure. Too bad, Greg. No, no. Just so you know, I love Greg Berger. Well, we've done stage shows together. We've been around each other for a long time. He's the best. I don't know. From all I remember is Roger C. Thomas on the original Star Trek way back when. But I'm not sure who else. You got me. I don't know.
Let me ask you this. When the
now Duran doesn't smell. Duran smells just fine.
Well, I don't know about that, but we're going to leave that alone. When the opportunity arose for Star Trek: The Next Generation, what were you thinking? I mean, when this role came up, I mean, you've already done one iconic character. You've done several, but this is one that is, you know, through the years, and Star Trek has proven to be through the years something that is iconic that you would be known for. Even for the role that you how did you take that role? Did you take it like this is going to be something that years from now people are going to say, hey, I remember you did this? Or is this just going to be one of those where I was in the background and no one noticed me?
No. This character I felt was perfect for me. It's one of those characters, one of those roles that you say, I know this guy. I just know who he was.
Was this the first character for Star Trek that you auditioned for? Was
first
this the
one
that you wanted?
This is the first one I ever auditioned for. Okay. And it was one of those deals where when I got the audition, the casting director must have known that I was right for it because, you know, they called me in for it. And it was just, there's some roles where you go to the audition or you work on it and you work on it before you go to the audition and say, okay, well, I don't really feel it. It's me, but I'm an actor. I can bring that out. This guy, he was my wife will tell you, it's basically me, just a nice guy who's inquisitive, wants to know stuff, and can be guileless. He's not, you know, judging anything. He's just there. And I like chocolate. So
that's actually a question that I wondered. I watched the episode. I've been so busy this past week. It's not even funny, but I did have a chance to sit down and watch an episode, the episode Liaisons, earlier this week, in preparation for the show. And that was one question that always always popped in my head every time you were on screen. It's like, I know that so many times actors have to take multiple takes to get something just right, get a line just right, standing in the wrong spot, holding something the wrong way. Did you get sick of chocolate during those shootings?
Unfortunately, I mean this sincerely as well. Unfortunately, we did it in a couple of takes. I would love to have screwed up a few more times and had a little bit more.
So what you're telling me is that you did it better than Tom Cruise did.
Who?
When Tom Cruise was in his first movie.
I'm sorry. I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. With his chocolate cake, and he got sick of it because they had to keep doing it. You took it within a few takes, and I mean, you know,
it wasn't my first hayride either. I've had been around for a while.
Well, there you go. See,
basically,
you had one over on him already.
Yeah, it was. I wish we'd screwed up a few more times because it was really that was all real stuff. That was real food, and it was really tasty.
Well, it's cheaper to make it real than it is to make it synthetic. So there you go.
Yeah, in the past though, I did a Cheers years ago. And they had this incredible spread out there. But they had to, with clams on oysters on the half shell and clams and lobster and all kinds of stuff. Nice. But what they did was they sprayed it all so it would stay looking good because it was there for hours. So we couldn't touch anything. It looked great, but yeah. But this stuff, it was real food. You know? And it was good food.
You know? There you go.
Anyway.
All right. Let's move on. I'm going to list off. I've got your IMDb page pulled up here, and I mean, there's things on here. I'm like, wow. You know, shows that I watched that I suddenly didn't realize. Hey, that was you, Trapper John, M.D., anesthesiologist.
I did four episodes. Sometimes I was an anesthesiologist. Sometimes unfortunately, when I was operating on Jerry Stiller, I lost him. He didn't make it. He died. But I also performed surgery on, I can't remember the actress's name, on her baby in utero. And I saved the child because there was a kidney problem, and I corrected something. So I was really good. And then I played an anesthesiologist a couple of times. The great thing was because I was a doctor and always in the operating room, they could bring me back again and again and be different characters because I never took the mask off. But my voice was there. Mm-hmm. I'm operating on I'm saving the baby.
So no one's supposed to identify you by your eyes and your voice, right?
Right, right.
It's kind of like the guy from Tool Time.
Wilson.
Wilson. Yeah,
Wilson.
On the other side of the fence, right?
Wilson. Where you never see part of it, whatever. But I got you. You're talking about classics, 80s, 90s TV. Yeah, it's cheaper. You just keep the same guy on the payroll.
You were even in I remember it. I even owned the entire series on DVD. Riptide. You were on Riptide as a character named Phil in the episode "Somebody's Killing the Great Geeks of America." How appropriate!
Wow, that is appropriate.
I had forgotten that was the title of that. Oh my gosh, that was one of my first gigs out here. I think it was maybe my second or third thing that I did when I moved out here. I did a show. My first job on camera was Goodnight Beantown with the Incredible Hulk with Bill Bixby. It was his show. And then I think Riptide, I was on it before they changed the name to Riptide, because originally it was Pier 49 or something like that, and then they changed the name. Yeah, that was that was a long time ago.
I still have it.
you just keep adding them up, don't you?
Yeah.
So you got to work with Bill Bixby, huh?
That was cool.
That's another you can add over me. I got you now. I mean, you just keep adding them up. See how it is.
What's the other one? Was there ever a role, sometimes actors say this, but was there ever a role that you got offered that you turned it down and then it turned into something big or something memorable that someone else is known for?
Butch Cassidy. I was offered Butch Cassidy, and I said I didn't want to work with that other guy.
Wow.
Because he was cuter than me. And if you believe that, I've got some property I'd like to sell you. no. Believe nothing this man says. Oh, yeah. I was offered a show that went to Broadway and went lasted for a long time on Broadway. This is years ago, but I didn't want to do it because I thought it was racist. And it turned out that it really wasn't. I was just on my high horse. And it was this really dumb move on my part. It was just one of those things. It would have been a great role for me. And who knows, it probably could have changed the arc of my career. I may not have been doing any of the voice work, but I may have been doing Broadway instead. You know what I mean? So when you really look back on it, I'm really glad things turned out the way it did.
You were going to do Cats? Oh my God. That I didn't know it. That.
No, it was actually the Wiz. But oh. No, no.
Sorry. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry, but that was too easy. I had to go the easy route.
It was a good one, though.
Okay, can I guess the role?
What? Oh, yeah.
Was it the Tin Man?
No. Right. No, it wasn't the Wiz.
Should have been.
Yeah.
Looking at the list here, well, we all know, and the reason you're on Transformers for your listening pleasure tonight is because of your role on Transformers. Mm-hmm. But there was also another television series that that featured robots that changed form. This little known series called GoBots, you know, Challenge of the GoBots. You played a character named Scorp. On yep. there.
I was
don't even GoBots were awesome. I am a huge GoBots follower.
I was a bad guy. Yeah. I love Scorp.
It's more so.
Scorp was cool. Because he both as a plane and as when he transforms into the scorpion figure. It's like, yeah, man, I like that one.
See, they had triple changers before Transformers had triple.
Man, I've got that in the package somewhere, buried in my basement. I had no idea. Oh, yeah. I know what I'm getting autographed now.
It was very funny yesterday. Somebody posted on Facebook, which was better, the Transformers or the GoBots? Somebody posted, both of them were bad, and I just posted, and I'm in both of them. Is it new?
No.
Okay, let's see.
Any of you guys remember Sky Commanders? That was a short-lived one. Right after the, I think it was right after the GoBots.
Do I have to say yes?
In depth, yeah. No. But I remember having watched it when I was younger.
You watched it in reruns, you younger. Come on, shut up.
It was still on TV.
Hey, but, you weren't even glimmering your mom's eyes.
That was the one where they had the zip lines and stuff, right?
Yeah, and for me, it was like, how are they made toys, but and I was Raider Wrath. I was a bad guy on that one as well. But
they had the thing, personality.
But the thing that got me with that one is like, how are you going to market it? Are the kids? Do you have to have lines everywhere around your house for the kids to play on them? You know. Play with the toys. I didn't understand the thinking on that show.
Yeah, neither did they.
Yeah,
that's why it didn't do so good. But that's okay.
It happens.
Some other shows that we're going to mention here that were huge back in the 80s that I've watched from time to time. Hill Street Blues, Fame.
One of the greatest theme songs ever, Hill Street Blues.
Indeed.
The Twilight Not so much Zone. Fame, the new Twilight Zone.
I did that with Twilight Zone. I'm trying to remember.
If you did the new one, Shatner was on that one too, wasn't he?
Yeah. But the one I did, I get them confused. I don't know if it was the Twilight Zone or Amazing Stories. I think it was Twilight Zone.
Yeah, Amazing Stories. Did, I love.
Oh, my God. Those are great.
Twilight Zone I did worked with Patrick Swayze and Hector Elizondo. And here's the cool thing about the story that we did on the Twilight Zone. It was about a guy, a prisoner. I play the doctor in this prison. And the prisoner is there for, you know, killing somebody. Well, he and a partner try and escape. And as they're going over this fence, he gets hit by lightning. It's thrown down, and he gets shot as well, and his friend gets shot. And they bring him back into the hospital wing where I am, and I'm checking him over, and Patrick Swayze's wounds have healed in like a day. And his partner's looks like he's going to die. And then at one point, well, no one's around, Patrick Swayze reaches over and touches his buddy, and he glows for a second. And then the buddy is healed. So we find out that Patrick Swayze has this power to heal. Mm-hmm. He can touch somebody and heal them. It's like the Green Mile before the Green Mile.
Yeah. I think that was Amazing Stories.
Okay, it was Amazing Story. I was getting confused.
I think so, but I remember that
episode, Life on Death Road. Yep, the doctor.
Okay.
That's one of my favorite series of all time, by the way.
Amazing Stories was wonderful.
And Patrick Swayze was wonderful in it.
Yeah. I have to say, my mom used to watch Amazing Stories on CBS every week, every freaking week.
I still can hear the theme song in my head. Those cheesy CGI intro, but it was awesome.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is the opening used to scare the bejesus out of me. CG knight in armor came slashing a sword, I would crawl under the couch.
Tim, your mother didn't have much to do other than slap you silly. So she didn't have a whole lot to do.
Okay,
so she had to watch TV. She just had to smack you silly.
I'm also the guy that was scared of Falcor from the NeverEnding Story. So.
Well, there you go.
Make that what you will.
That guy I could understand.
Yeah.
Kind of freaky.
Well, we had a big TV, so, you know, you're sitting there watching the adventures, all of a sudden, woof, Atreyu! Oh, my God!
Yeah.
I was gone.
Yeah.
Also, see here, The Golden Girls, and also tied in Empty Nest.
Yep. Yep.
Whoa. You were on Golden Girls?
Yeah.
You played Peter in the episode Ebb Tide.
Yeah, I gotta ask. Yeah.
I just have to ask. Betty White.
The great thing was all my stuff was with Betty.
Was she as raunchy as she kind of portrays herself to be?
She was dear. And she had a great, I loved hugging her. I'd put it that way. she was open, wonderful. All my stuff was with her, and although I had little stuff with Rue McClanahan, who I'd already done a movie with, and I had also worked with it doesn't matter. But all my work was with Betty, and she could not have been sweeter. Anytime I hear anything good about her, it's like, believe it.
No. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, but yeah, she can be dirty, but she, yeah, you know,
exactly.
She can be not it, there.
Yeah, that's what she tries to portray now, and it, you know, I mean,
hot in Cleveland.
She always has had that reputation. If you go online, you can find full nudes of her back in the day when she was 18, 19 years old.
Back in the day.
Yeah, way back in the day.
No current ones, thank God.
Nothing. No
selfies.
So those of you who are watching the YouTube video, watch the faces of some of the guys down here at the bottom, and watch for one to go. And then see them lean into their screen. All right, let's talk some series that you did a little more work on, Picket Fences.
Yeah, great show. I just loved working on that show. I recurred on that show for a couple of seasons. If anybody remembers that show, they had a history of killing their mayors or having them disappear. The first season, it opened up with they were doing The Wizard of Oz, and their mayor gets killed on stage. And then each year after that, whoever was the mayor, they would either disappear or die in office. So the second season that I was recurring, I started out as a teacher for the little kid. Then I became a teacher in high school. Then I became the principal. And then they wanted me to be the mayor. And the funny thing in the scene was they were going to have Kathy Baker, who was the lead, do it. And she said, no, I don't think. And then they asked me as the mayor. And I said, no. And then we decided, well, if we were co-mayors, maybe we'd live. And it was like a little inside joke for anybody who knew the show. I loved doing that show. It was brilliantly written and just wonderful actors. Both Kathy and, oh God, what is his name? The lead, who was the star of Alien, the original Alien. No one expected him to die at the beginning of the, or early in the movie. He was in the original MASH. He was, you know, the original MASH movie.
Not Tom Skerritt.
Yes, Tom Skerritt.
Was it Tom Skerritt?
Tom Skerritt. Well done.
Nice.
Yeah, he was wonderful. You know, that was a great show to work on. I wish it had gone on a couple more seasons.
Wow. Let's see here. Let's move on to some more animated works. You spoke earlier about The Littles. I believe you were Grandpa on there.
Nope. I was not Grandpa. I was Dr. Oh God,
oh, that's right.
I was Mr. Dr. So and So, who was the sidekick of the bad guy. He was kind of a Weasley guy who had actually. He didn't want to be bad, but well, Henderson. Henderson was his name. Yeah, Mr. Henderson. Yeah. Yeah.
Here come the Littles. I did watch that show. See here, The Toxic Crusaders, Noza.
Yes.
One of my favorite shows. One of my favorite shows because it was over the top.
One of my favorite toys.
Oh, they're great toys. Oh, Nozone was the best, as far as I was concerned.
Oh, yeah. You take his goggles out, and you can pour the little ooze in the space where the goggles were, and when you push the goggles in, the ooze comes out of his nose. It was fantastic.
Yeah, green goo coming out of his nose.
Yep.
Nozone, yeah. No, we are hideously deformed creatures of superhuman size and strength.
We had to say that one of the characters, it had to be said twice in every show. And if you go back and watch any of them, you'll hear it. That was a great cast. The guy who did Toxie, our hero, also did Dr. Killamoff, the bad guy. And that was Squidward, Roger Bumpus.
Yeah.
Greg Berger was in that. He played Junkyard, a dog.
Yeah.
Hal Rail was in that. Susan Silo and Sue Blue directed it. Yeah, that was a fun show.
Awesome. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, did you work all too often with Lloyd Kaufman, or was it just kind of a passing thing?
It was in passing. At Christmas break, we all decided to get together and march through the Troma office singing Christmas carols that we wrote. Mm-hmm. It was really, really unprofessional. Really badly done. I mean, really poorly done, which was absolutely perfect for Troma. Yeah. They loved it. I actually saw Lloyd for the first time in many, many, many years. In fact, since doing the series last year at San Diego Comic-Con. Huh. And he was there, and I went up. I said, "Now, Lloyd, you won't remember me, but I played Nozone in the animated Toxic Crusaders." He said, "Oh, yeah. You're the one who ruined my career." It's like, oh, thank you, Lloyd. And he's great. He's still, you know, he's like 4 feet tall or whatever.
Yeah.
And funny as all get out. It was great. I loved that show. Can I tell you a real quick story?
Sure.
Okay. Auditioning for that. I went into audition for two roles. Nozone. And they wanted me to audition for the little toady character who was a sidekick of Dr. Killamoff. So I did this character. I picked something that I wanted to sound like. And after it was over, Sue said, "Who were you doing?" She said, "Because it sounded like I, oh God, what's his name?" And now I'm having a hard time remembering his name. Who ended up, well, he's got three names. He was in... oh, man, I can't remember his name. Anyway, I was doing this guy's voice because he was an actor in the 70s who was always stoned in the movies, and he always kind of sounded like he was...
Tommy Chong, Cheech Marin?
No. Oh. No, he was in Bonnie and Clyde. He played the sidekick in Bonnie and Clyde. It'll come to me. She said, because it was really great. It was really... I love that character. So I go away, I get the job, get a call that I got the job. We go to the first session, and they're doing the role that I had auditioned for, the toady role, mm-hmm. with the guy whose voice I was doing. I got him a job.
Wow.
And I think that's the only voiceover he's ever done.
The funny thing is Sue Blue has a similar story to that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I talked to her, and she said that she auditioned with a little girl, and she went for this part, and she never heard back from it. And she went to another audition, and the little girl was there. And when she was talking to her, she's like, yeah, I'm so excited. I got this part, and it was the one that Sue had auditioned for that she didn't hear about. So it was kind of similar. She was just kind of like, oh, good for you.
Yeah, I'm so happy. But the difference is I was doing his voice. I was mimicking this guy.
Yeah.
They hadn't even thought of bringing him in for the part.
Yeah.
But when she heard my voice doing him, they had the idea, well, let's bring this guy in. And they did, and he got the role. It was like, wow. Yay.
You sound so good, so close to him. Let's get him in.
Yeah.
So
I got to tell you, he's a great guy, but the job took all the sessions took a lot longer because he didn't know what he was doing. And, you know, and I hope he doesn't hear this, but he had lost a lot of brain cells from all the drugs he had done.
Wow.
I was like, oh, yeah.
Now, before we go on to your work in video games and everything, which looking at the list here is also quite extensive. Of course, you know, in recent years, video game voiceovers have become a staple of a lot of voice actors, too. It's great that video games have added to your all's work. I mean, it's just animation and things like that. Now it's more work for you guys. It's great. But let's talk about your episode of Grey's Anatomy. And that is a very serious role. And I'll be honest, it's the only episode of Grey's Anatomy I've ever watched. Because I heard that you were on it. I'm like, I got to watch that episode.
Oh, man, you're very kind.
I have to say that you knocked it out of the park. Great. you want to talk a little bit about that role?
Yeah, I got a call that it was, they call it a one-day guest star. They're going to shoot everything in a day. It's not throughout the entire thing. And do I want to audition for it? I said, sure. And it's a really interesting character because the setup is that this guy's lover is dying. She's in the hospital dying. And he's of course torn up by it. But he finds out what she's doing before she dies. She's interviewing women to become his lover after she dies. And number one, he's upset because he can take care of himself. He doesn't need somebody to do that for him. And number two, as far as he's concerned, there is no one else like her, you know. And so he's at the hospital, and he's being comforted by his best friend. And we find out you find out in the story that his best friend that is comforting him is married to his lover who's dying. Because they've stayed friends, even though they're no longer, they're still, and they've stayed married too. But, you know, so it's okay that she is now his lover. So it was very, very, it was tough. And you get to the point where I've got to come to tears. And they asked me if it was going to be tough for me to do that. And it's like, I've got a wife that I love dearly, and I have two daughters. So picturing one of my loved ones in that bed instead of that woman that I hadn't met yet, it was easy for me to get to that point. And I'd been told, this is another thing, never believe everything you hear about people in the business. I had been told, oh, man, wait till you work with a director. She's really tough. She's really, she can be really hard, and she's really kind of a jerk. And I had actually worked with her once before on Fame years ago. Well, I went in, and she could not have been kinder or more helpful, because generally what you do, you shoot the one's a master shot, and then they move the camera around, shoot different angles. They'll just have little pickups of like four words here, then to cut around and shoot from the other angle, five words there, a reaction shot here, just all that kind of stuff. And she said, well, Paul, what would be best for you? Because the cameraman said, all we need is this, just this 5 seconds. And she said, well, Paul, what would be best for you? And I said, as far as I'm concerned, it's a short scene. It's incredibly emotional. I'd rather do it from the beginning to the end, the whole thing every time. To get to that point so it doesn't seem fake and that you're, you know, cheating. And she said, absolutely. So every time they moved the camera, we did it the whole thing from the beginning to the end. And that was really, really generous because they don't have to do that. They can say, no, we need time. It takes too long. Let's do this. And she said, no, whatever's going to help you. And it was wonderful. And it was great to be on that show, you know?
Phenomenal. Yeah. Listener another Transformer podcaster, Rob Springer of Radio Free Cybertron, he just wanted to have a shout out and say hi to you. So,
hey, Rob. How you doing, man?
Let's talk a little bit about your work on video games. Now, video games, tell listeners what's the biggest difference between acting for cartoons or a voiceover for a live action show or something like that and video games. Is there any difference or what's the
Yeah, there are subtle differences. Number one, it's all acting, and number two, it all has to be honest. It has to be. You have to believe what you're saying. You can't, you know, even though in cartoons you're having a good time, you have to believe that you're in that environment. You have to, you know, some actors work technically. Once I find the voice and where I want it to be, you know. Technically and all that stuff, then it's got to be from acting from here instead of just from up there. So all that for me is the same. One of the differences is cartoons have to be heightened reality, just like video games. You have to, you know, it has to be real, but it can't be just talking like this because, you know, this is normal talk that we do at home and nobody wants to hear that for, you know, 8 hours of, you know, gameplay or whatever. So it's got to be heightened. It's got to be more in your face, and you have to be more alive. I don't know what else to call it except that, or heightened. And most of the video games that I've been doing, except for a couple, most of them are more like radio drama because they're either war stories or, you know, different kind of fantasy stories where you're creating different worlds, but it's less cartoony, meaning less like Adventure Time and things like that. It's more real, you know. And then the big thing for me is being in the room by yourself, you know, and repeating the same line 3 or 4 times before you get to move on to the next line. With animation, generally, you get to do a whole scene. So there's a flow to it. With the video games, it's do this line, do three, you know, a short version, middle version, and a long version. Take, you know, the different length of time and different intensities, and then you get to move on to the next.
For example, like it's falling, it's falling, it's falling. Yep. Yeah.
You must create additional pylons.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of heightened reality.
Yeah.
I'm married, so anyone who's married can relate to this. I have a wife who is asking me to come upstairs, so I have to go. But I want to thank Mr. Iding for letting me speak to him in such a candid way. Thank you. Not every fan gets to experience this, so it's definitely a real experience, and I want to just share this quick story with you. I have this, my favorite thing in my collection, I have this original Transformers movie poster, and I have it signed by a bunch of people and who were in the film. I've got it signed by like 16 different people, and Nelson Shin and Flint Dilley and Susan Blue and Peter Kahn, a bunch of different people. And I have it signed by you as well. And that is one of my favorite things, and it's framed, and it's the first thing I see whenever I come down into the basement. And it's like the one thing besides my kids I'd probably want to save in a fire. Well, that, maybe my dog. So thank you for sharing your time with us and for letting me speak to you. And with that, I'll let you get back to the other guys. I'm sorry, I have to go.
That's all right. Listen, thank you. I that means more to me than you know, that I can express. I'm when I say this stuff, it's not, you know, this isn't just, you know, baloney. I really mean it. I really appreciate that. And like I say at all the cons everywhere, we are all in this together. In a strange way, all, you know, all are one. We are in this together. Where would any of us, Greg Berger, Peter Cullen, any of us, where would we be without people who care about what we do? Nothing. We're nothing without the, you know, fans who like the work.
Well, thank you for what you do, and please know that I'm playing all those DVDs in my van whenever I'm driving anywhere with my kid, and she's listening to everybody. She's listening to Peter Cullen and Frank Welker and Chris Latta and to you and to Greg Berger and everybody. So your work, you know, will outlive you, and that's something not everyone gets to have in life.
Very
so thank
cool.
you for that. And guys, good night. Enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you, Mr. Iding.
See Take you, care, man. No, You're a good dad.
now, some of the major franchises that you've worked on, Fallout, you've been, see here, Fallout 3 SE,
yep.
Nathan Vargas, and a few other voices.
I'm 15 or no, somebody told me I was 18 voices in that one. 18
wow. Characters.
Yeah, I'm basically every old man you come up to. So I'm throughout that game. And I can say that I'm in Fallout 4. For a long time, I couldn't speak about it. But once they did a release at E3, and my character appears in the beginning of the game, then they said, well, yeah, now you can say that you are in the game. And that you had a good time, and that's all you can say. But I can say this: it looks incredible. There, yeah.
These next gen games. I really wish I've got a PlayStation 4. I use it for Netflix and Hulu, and right. But I mean, you know, we get older. We don't have time anymore like we used to,
yep.
Some of these games are just blowing me away with the way they look, the realism and everything. It's
that and the storytelling as well. Because you can, you talk about long form, you can really tell stories, you know, a Metal Gear, that story now spans over five different, games, and it just continues to grow the lore and whatnot. And you can't do that in a movie. You know, but in the video games, it's pretty incredible. It really is what these genius writers are coming up with.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned Metal Gear. You have any fond stories about Metal Gear Solid or?
Metal Gear is one of the first games. In fact, one of the only games I've ever done where I actually got to be in the room with the other actors, especially in Metal Gear 1. Snake and Colonel Campbell were in the room together. Kim, I guess, was in the room with us. So there were times when we all got to be there together for those scenes. They felt it was really important to have the spontaneity and the real, you know, interaction.
Metal Gear Solid or...
Whoop.
Metal Gear is one of the... Whoop. My phone started going off here, sorry.
That's
fine. I apologize.
No worries. Now, I'm not in... this last one that just came out a day or so ago, Phantom Pain. And it's funny because Hideo Kojima is very famous. He's famous for holding little, you know, dropping little suggestions to the games, to the gamers, or little ideas that may or may not be true. And he's great at marketing and whatnot that way. And you never know what's true and what isn't true. And he does that intentionally. So when people would ask me if I was in the game, I would say, no, I'm not in the game. I've been on in the other ones, but no, I'm not in this one. And no one believed me. And I said, no, see, guys, if I was in the game, then I would have had to sign an NDA saying I couldn't talk about it. But because I'm not in the game, I can talk about it. I'm not in the game. And they wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe it. And then about 2 weeks ago, I posted on Twitter, I said, I'll be glad when Metal Gear finally drops, because my friends will see that I wasn't lying. Well, even that, guys take it and say, oh, what do you mean by that? What did he really mean by that? Does he mean, you know, it's like, no, I meant I was telling you the truth. So I'm not in it, and that's Kiefer Sutherland, isn't the lead in that game now. Which All right. also looks apparently incredible.
Jim, do you have a listener question from YouTube?
Yes, from Brink of Prime on YouTube about 15 odd minutes ago. He asks, Paul, you've contributed so many media properties throughout your career. I'm sorry. Are there any properties out there that you are still pining to participate in?
Yeah. I would love to do Uncharted. I've never done anything with Uncharted. That would have been a video game. That'd be great. I'd love to be involved with any of the new Transformer series or the new Transformer games.
Had you seen the information that's been released for the newest Transformer game comes out, I think, October?
Yeah, I've seen it. But even for the last Cybertron War...
Warp Cybertron? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Apparently, somebody else did a version of me. I never even got an audition for the thing.
Wow.
They never called me. It's like, what's the deal? I think it was, someone said it was Jim Ward, who's a good buddy and terrific actor, who was doing me. Mm-hmm. I'd love to continue on with that.
Yeah. So something with this game though is that they are. They're keeping it to kind of a fairly limited cast.
Right, with this one, yeah.
Right, but they are bringing in some of the veteran voice actors from Generation 1. They brought back Peter, they brought back Frank, Greg.
Greg is in it. Right.
And I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping maybe they might have you in there and they just... You can't talk about it and that sort of thing, you know, and it'll be a surprise on down the road. But...
No, see, I'll tell you the same thing I told them with Metal Gear. If I was in it, I couldn't say anything about it.
Right.
But because I'm not in it and I haven't signed a non-disclosure agreement, I ain't in it. Haven't even been contacted.
See, I was kind of half hoping that you would be because I don't know if you're aware, the original Perceptor toy is actually being reissued.
Like
now, it's in a two-pack with Buster Jones Blaster.
I signed a bunch of those when I was in Australia. It looks great. They look great together.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, and I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I'm not in it.
Wow.
If you have any pull and can call somebody, tell them that I'm available.
Oh, what we got there, Brett?
He's got one.
That's the vintage. That's not a reissue.
That's what you are.
Right here. Yeah. That's awesome, man.
All right. Now, here's the thing. Yeah. I was going to save this for towards the end, but, you know, opportunity and my ego kind of got in the way. But I have a question. This, and a lot of people know this, when I was growing up, we grew up poor. And one of the first Transformers I ever had was a knockoff Soundwave. Cheap, got it at a flea market.
Mm-hmm.
But what people don't know is one of the, I'm going to say the first five that I got was Perceptor, which wasn't a knockup. It was actually one like this.
Cool.
Not this one, but, you know, one like it.
Right.
But here's the thing, and I have this question, because as a youngster who is all about, you know, the Autobots versus the Decepticons, you know, planes, guns, all this, that, and the other, and then you get a microscope. I'll be honest. I made him into a tank, okay? Made a tank out of him.
You're not alone.
You can look, and there's little treads on him, this, that, and the other. I'm sorry, but I did. I folded him down and made him into a tank. My question is what are your thoughts on that? You know, you're talking about this war between the Autobots and the Decepticons, and you're a microscope. I'm not trying to be mean or devil's advocate. I'm really curious what your thought was on that, as to what your role was going to be when you were told you were going to be a microscope.
The thing that I was most worried about were some of the language that he had him, you know, that the verbosity of the man, of the robot, and all those words that I had no idea what the heck I was saying. That worried me more than anything. I didn't care. Bottom line, when you're an actor, you get a job. You don't care what the job is. You're just like, hey, I'm on a series, buddy.
That's right. It's a J-O-B.
I'm a happy dude. You know, right. I'm working with my friends. Well, you know, what more can you ask?
I understand that 100%.
And so, you know, of course, after a while, it gets to the point where it's like, wait a minute, everybody else gets to do all these cool things, and I'm just stuck here.
Yeah.
Did we lose him?
No.
He froze up a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyone here, while I'm waiting for him to come back, I mean, anyone here can understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Who didn't take him with his little treads? Let me do it right here. His little treads right here. Lay him down, flip the cannon up, and he's a tank. Everyone did. That's what you did with him. Go ahead.
The guy who got the Tesla did the same thing. He showed me in Australia last week. He said, check it out. He's a tank. Huh? Okay, it's not a major tank, but it's a tank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you see, kids like me were doing that back in the 80s when it was cool with him.
That's it. Well, that means that that he was much more versatile than everyone else. And if you remember, there happened to be a few episodes where I've been asked about. They said, okay, now wait a minute. All right, I know Perceptor's a scientist, but how does he change size and shrink the way he does? All of a sudden, he's sitting on top of something, on top of the...
Right, and then sometimes he doesn't.
Exactly.
But go ahead.
It's magic.
It's the mass shifting thing. The character Astral Train, that's voiced by Jack Angel. He turns from this giant robot that is roughly the size of the other Decepticons, yet he turns into a train and then a space shuttle that the other Decepticons can ride in. It's like the joke among the fans is Astral Train. He hauls Decepticons in his ass.
but no matter how you look at it, Mr. Paul Eide, not only were you a Transformer, but you had magic.
Yeah, and the other thing about Perceptor was, except for, I guess, Soundwave, but really, Perceptor was the only one that was actually practical, because that microscope actually did make things a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm. You're correct, because Blaster, trust me, he didn't play any of my tapes.
Yeah.
Soundwave didn't do it either. But I could still take this, and if you look on the – yeah, it's actually on the bottom, and it says, we'll magnify 14 times, and it actually does.
See?
It worked. It did work.
I actually tried it out.
So did I. So it yeah. does work.
Yeah. Little put a little piece of a leaf under there or something.
I will say this much: as a tank, he doesn't do so good.
Well, that's one of the great things about Transformers, the franchise and the toys, is that in so many other ways, different than other kinds of toys, Transformers spark the imagination of science and learning. And Perceptor was the perfect toy for that. And I think that's one of the reasons that he was such a popular and well-loved character, not just because of the character, not just because of the toy, but because of the character on screen. He exemplified what you would expect a microscope that turned into a robot to be.
Yeah. Listen, my friend Randall Ng, you guys know Randall?
Yes.
Amazing computer animator. Asked me, I guess it was last year sometime, if I would do a little educational video. I just gave him some voiceover stuff. And then he took it and animated it. And wasn't supposed to be funny at all. It's supposed to be educational. And it's basically about the planets. Mm-hmm. And he put it together in his spare time. I don't know how he does it. He works full time. Mm-hmm. He's married. He's a great dad with this wonderful kid. And somehow he puts these things together. He's the guy who did the Transformers Gundam style.
Mm-hmm.
Is now 12 million or 14 million views or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, he put this thing together, and people have said, well, it wasn't funny enough. Well, it wasn't supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be educational because he's a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if somebody gave him money, we'd probably do a lot more of them. But, it's that kind of stuff you can't do by yourself in your spare time.
It's like this podcast. So many people ask, why don't you do this and everything? It's like, do you realize I lose money doing this? It's like the server and these microphones and everything, they're not cheap.
Right.
And I make no money off this.
Yeah.
So.
You're obviously doing something wrong.
Yes. I don't know
what you're talking about. I mean, Duron pays me like big bucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What are you guys doing? I don't know.
But it's a labor of love, and it's great that fans out there like Randall is able to do things like that.
Yeah.
That it's just awesome.
Look, the other thing that when I got serious a while ago about going to these fan conventions and meeting people and everything, Comic Cons and whatnot. What you were talking a minute ago, it hit me. Here we are, grown men, all these years later,
some
talking
of us.
About, yeah, well, chronologically grown men.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, talking about cartoons that were done back in the 80s, and it just hit me in one way, wow, we are all nerds and geeks. And the other way, no, it's not that, it's the passion. That's why I love going to these cons. Anybody, these kids, whether they know who I am or that they're all for the anime with all the costumes and whatnot, the passion people have for what they love, mm-hmm. that excites me. That fires me up. I love working with younger actors because they still have that passion. So anybody has a passion, as long as it's not hurting other people or killing puppies, that's the people I want to be around. Because you make you feel alive, and hopefully it rubs off on you. You get, okay, oh yeah, I can have a passion about something.
Sure.
Because that's one thing that is beat out of us when we're kids. Eventually, okay, now you're getting older, you stop it, you got to be an adult. Screw that. No. Anyway, okay, I'm off my soapbox.
No, but you're correct. You're correct in that. By getting around people that have a passion for whatever it is, it helps you spark your passion you had or should have.
Yeah.
And what you're interested in. So absolutely, it you could say re-sparks,
yeah,
to coin a phrase.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely.
Sure is.
You know, it brings you back to what you loved, you know, so that you see, you know, you remember your first joy in some of us here with our first Transformer, or the first time we got to see it on TV or even the big screen, or the first time we got to talk to one of the voice actors of one of our best characters that we saw on the big screen and on the TV. So whichever it is.
Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever, you know.
That brings it right back.
Well, to that end, you know, I mean, I've said it before on the show and I'll say it again. And I'll tie this in with Paul here in a moment. We all have something that is our getaway mechanism, something that we, you know, whether it be fishing, working on our cars, or toys, and this Transformers franchise. I told Paul back in 2010 when I first met him at BotCon, you know, I was a very sick little boy, and Transformers, I had a lot to be down in the dumps on, and I didn't have a lot to be positive about. But Transformers gave me something to latch onto and be positive about, and it was a positive reinforcement that I needed in my life. And those characters, and those voice actors that gave those characters life, like Paul, and I thank you again for meaning so much to me as a child, and gave me something positive to work or to build upon and have a positive outlook on life. And then I fast forward to my adult life. Now, you know, in the type of job that I'm in, and you know, we all do something different. I know Brett's job is equally, if not more, dangerous. So, you know, you gotta have that escape.
Yeah.
And a couple Absolutely. Years ago, I was reminded how dangerous my job is. And in a time of need, Paul, you came to the rescue again. And just those few messages that you sent me on Facebook, the encouragement, I gotta thank you. I mean, it touched me and kept me going on and happy.
Well, I wanted to add something to that, and I want everyone to know this, and I mean, most people will agree with this. There were a lot of, and I am biased because I grew up in the 80s, but there were a lot of great cartoon shows in the 80s. And you had Transformers, you had G.I. Joe, you had Thundercats, you had He-Man. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
All that. But I personally am going to narrow it down to three. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But you had Transformers, of course. You had G.I. Joe. And you had Robotech. Now, most people won't agree with me, maybe not, on Robotech. But the main reason I loved all three was is they had substance. They had story. They had a reason. It wasn't just, you know, here it is. This is the moral of the day. We're done. They built upon each other. And the funny thing is my dad, he actually way back in the 80s, he kind of saw what I was watching. He was like, man, these are like soap operas. And he laughed and he walked away. They were. They really were. They built upon each other. So yeah. That when Perceptor told you something, it wasn't a character. It was Perceptor telling you. Perceptor is this because he did this, he did this, he did this. So he knows what he's talking about. When Prime said, we're going to do this, there's a reason, because he stands for this and this and this, and we know. It built upon itself. I mean, those stories And yes, they were there to sell toys and entertain kids, but it was the building blocks for who we were.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And I am, unlike these two youngers here,
yeah,
I am a child of the 80s. And that's what your abilities, what you did for me and instilled what we're supposed to do. These are the values set forth when we were young. And that's what carried me on to where
still,
I am today.
Still has impact today.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I only wish that some of these shows, now, once again, you get older and you see some of these shows, whatever. But I don't see the substance, the meaning, the story, the development that we had in the 80s. And, I mean, I have three boys of my own. And I just don't think they're getting the same – they're not getting the same message that we got in the 80s. I really believe that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what we got in the 80s with the shows that we got, that you are definitely a part of, you definitely were there. They sculpted what we are today.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think there's a place for all the different kinds of stuff. As long as there are different kinds, there's a place for just the silly stuff. I mean, God knows we all need silly stuff.
Absolutely.
And I think there's also a place for shows that mean something. That, you know, I don't know. I've done a bunch of Avatar, but I have not done a lot of them. But I have people who just swear by Avatar, the stories that are behind. They feel the same sort of way around Avatar.
Sure, because that connected with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, absolutely.
And I get people who really connect with Ben 10, not all of Ben 10, but certain incarnations of Ben 10, because it's more about lessons and being with Grandpa Max and listening to and helping each other, as opposed to going out there and just changing into another alien and selling more toys. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're bringing the show back. I can't disagree with you though, at all.
Yeah. Got one question here, and then I'll let Jim ask the Twitter question and his question, and then I think we can wrap it up. Chad Williams, one of the guys here on the show.
Hey, Chad.
he asks, is there a certain thing that you wanted Perceptor to do as a character that never actually happened?
Oh, wow. You know what? It actually happened. You know, so it didn't. I wanted him to you know, show that his and it happened in the movie.
He is either thinking really hard or he froze.
I think, he froze.
Either way.
Who froze? Eddie
back.
You froze up your video.
Oh, I did.
Yes.
Am I back now?
Yeah, you're back now.
Well, that was the most intelligent thing I think I've ever said in my life. I'm sorry.
Oh my God, we missed it.
I'm sorry. And I can't repeat it.
All I can say is the last time I froze, I gave the meaning of life. I don't know about you. I was right there.
This is like Dalai Lama stuff, you know.
Exactly.
you told the exact location of the Fountain of Youth and also El Dorado.
I wish I could find that.
And you missed it. Sorry. No, I think basically I said that I don't think so. At one point, I wanted him to be a tougher, but then, you know, but when he says blaster, you know, and says blaster, run, you know, save yourself. He's willing to sacrifice himself. So he shows that he's one of them instead of, you know, being separate. So right. I think that was, I remember early on, that's one thing I wanted, was to show that he was one of the guys. He wasn't just
the courage,
absent-minded. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Jim, you want to read the Twitter question first? I think both of them kind of tie into each other.
Yeah, we had actually two different posts about an hour ago. One from Dan at Oprod, and another one from Ted Anderson, Terran 12. They both essentially asked the same thing. In the comics currently published by IDW Comics, Perceptor is in there. And they were curious if you knew anything about that incarnation of Perceptor as he is in those comics at all, or if you were in the loop on that, and if you were, what you thought of it.
Are we talking about when he has been reprogrammed and become a Decepticon and a sniper, or has he been through that already? Because I've been asked that one, and I've seen some of those Okay. And actually spoken to a couple of the writers. And I thought he was pretty badass. You know, when you Perceptor with the blue patch over his eye. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course it's not Perceptor. But you can do anything if you say, you know, somebody messes with the programming and changes things and he becomes, a Decepticon for a while and a sniper. And someone asked me, how would you voice him then? Because he wouldn't sound the same. And of course, I would do it. I'd love to do it.
How would he sound if he were a Decepticon Perceptor?
Give us a little sample.
I am Perceptor. I can shoot anything at any range at any time.
I like it.
There you go. I like that. He's kind of chilly.
Maniacal.
Yeah. Yes, I think he would still have a bit of the English accent, but softer. Because people with power don't need to scream all the time. Mm. When he knows that he can take you out when he wants to. Something like that. I don't know.
It works for me.
Talk softly and carry a big microscope.
There you go.
Big optical zoom.
And don't be afraid to use it.
All right. Now, Jim, you had a question?
I just wanted to backtrack just a smidge. We had mentioned earlier about the reissue Perceptor that comes in the two-pack with Blaster. And that actually got me thinking a little bit. A couple years back at a convention called SlagaCon, they had two guests, Arlene Bannis and the late Buster Jones. Mm-hmm. And being that the Blaster's in that two-pack, it got me thinking, did you possibly have any stories or anything that just comes to mind when you think of Buster?
No, except that he was just a gentleman. He was, he was just a good guy. You know, I don't know. I don't have any, or I don't remember any, major stories. Just a class act, just good. I was really lucky with that crew. I mean, the coolest one of me, and you've heard him, was Scatman, scatting in between, takes or before we went in. Everybody was always wanting to hear Scatman, just because he was Scatman. Mm-hmm. But nothing sticks out except that he was just just a good man. I just really liked him. We didn't spend a lot of time. There's certain ones that you hang around with and some other people you don't hang around with. Burger, because Greg and because we ended up doing a lot of other things together, a lot of cartoons together. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That's actually kind of interesting that you would mention Benjamin Crothers there, the Scatman, is my old stomping grounds, Terre Haute, Indiana, is where he was born and raised.
Oh, really?
I went to high school there, and I didn't find out until it must have been 5-6 years ago now. I found out, and I lived there this whole time and not known that.
Oh, wow.
That's where he originally hailed from. So I was actually going to ask you about Scatman next.
He was special. I don't know how old he was when we were doing it, but he seemed so much older than everybody else, and also so much cooler than everybody else, because he was. I mean, you know, he was just naturally cool, you know, and naturally open and sweet, and we just wanted to hang around him. It's like, man, let some of that cool rub off on me, man. Yeah. Yeah, because the dude really was. Yeah, he was just... Yeah, the dude could sing. You know, he could play, yes, too. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Yeah, I like that, man. Mm-hmm.
Now,
that's not my impersonation of him.
But I'll tell you, that is extremely close. That was impressive.
That was more him rubbing off on me.
That was impressive.
You were in Up and WALL-E?
Yes. Yes. I'm in Up, I'm in WALL-E, I'm in Monsters University, Monsters, Inc. Wait a minute. Bugs Life, Finding Nemo.
If you end up in Toy Story 4, you better be playing Perceptor.
Would that be cool? Listen, I can't tell you. Yeah, I tried to get the band to put Perceptor in somewhere. Oh, wait a minute. I think he did... Wait a minute. I think he did. What's his name? A good friend. Also, who did the last Omniverse. He was the art director for Omniverse. He was at the last BotCon, the last couple of BotCons, because he did the artwork. He did the designs for...
Derek Wyatt?
Huh?
Derek J. Wyatt, or am I thinking of someone else?
I couldn't couldn't hear you.
Oh. Derek Wyatt, Derek J. Wyatt.
Yeah, Derek.
Yeah, okay.
Derek. I think he found some way of drawing a little, because he told me he was going to do it. And I've got to contact Derek and say, okay, Derek, did you ever do it? Did you ever put him in one of the episodes? Because he said he was going to try and just in the background, just have a little replica of Perceptor. Nice. I've got to. Oh, now see, now I'm going to contact Derek and say, Derek, come on, man, did you do it? Because he also did animated. Mm-hmm. He was one of the other ones, part of that whole crew that ruined my career. Derek, yeah. Anyway,
what characters were you in WALL-E and Up?
Oh, several characters. I was in a group called Lipstick. And we were their Pixar's group, who anytime there were additional characters that they wanted to throw in, they would contact us. We would go in, and you never knew until the movie came out who you were. I did a bunch of Mater tales too, you know, the shorts they did with Mater. In Up, oh gosh, we were all dogs. I don't remember. Isn't that terrible? Mm. I remember in Finding Nemo, I was the flatfish that comes out of the sand. I knew that's one of the guys.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, and then several of us, we were all turtles, man. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. Catch the flow. I was also the Australian Prime Minister, who basically just screamed when he's getting his teeth done. And we were all, mine. We were all seagulls.
My girlfriend, whenever I give her a hug, sometimes I do that.
Mine. So we get to do all that stuff and just love working with John Lasseter and Pixar. I mean, they're loyal, number one. Number two, it's about story. They care more about story than anything else. Like I said, really a lucky guy.
Definitely.
Okay.
Well, Paul, I would say so. You got Enterprise. You've got Shatner. I mean, yeah, Dan Troy. I mean, I just off the list.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah. Some of us have got it, you know, and some of us.
I'd say when you got it, you got it. You know, might as well flaunt it. Go ahead.
The Paul, this has been a phenomenal time, and I want to thank you ever so much from the bottom of my heart and from all of us here at TFYLP, the listeners. Thank you so much for all that you've done and for coming on the show and yes. talking about you. These things. And I want to extend.
This has really been hell. This has really been hard to do. You guys.
He's had to pee for the last hour.
No, I already did. Oh. I'm in my little soundproof booth here, so no one will ever know.
He's going to have what's called a trucker bomb later on.
But my sister-in-law drove an 18-wheeler, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But Paul, you know, I want to invite you back again sometime soon. I mean, there's so much to talk about, so much that you can tell us, I'm sure. It's a pleasure, absolute pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure, guys. And like I said, I really mean it. We're all in this together.
Absolutely.
It goes around. It doesn't go like this. It really does go around and around and around. We all need each other, and we all live for each other, you know?
Absolutely.
Hey, Paul, we're in it together. Yeah.
Speaking of which, that whole circle of life, it got me thinking, you know, on and on these different shows and interviews and things, I'm sure the fans have bombarded you with question after question, you know, just they want to know this and they want to know that. But that got me thinking, is there anything that you've always wanted to ask the fans? Is there anything that you wanted to know?
Good question.
Kind of turn the tables a little bit.
Why don't you guys use soap? I knew it.
Now, see, you're only thinking about that because BotCon's fresh, you know, the announcement and going to be here in town, you know. But
every convention I go to, there's always one.
Then maybe you should stop going. They're trying to smell on you.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a question. If it's every
soap.
Convention you go to, is it you?
No, I okay, used to. There was trust me, I was told a long time ago, make sure take a shower and you wash your ass twice.
Not once, but twice.
Twice.
And wash your ass last.
Exactly. Exactly. And then
what was it? There's the old joke about the, you know, after 30 days in the field, I was in the military. All right, guys, the sergeant comes up and says, after 30 days in the field with no showers, we finally have a change in clothes. John, you change with Mark. Mark, you change with Phil.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was unaware. Which branch did you serve in, by the way?
Army.
Army? Huh?
Sergeant.
Thank you.
Sergeant Eiding.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Some of the best time of my life. Awesome. And I've got to think about that question. That's a good question. I'm going to have to think about that one because I don't want to give a flip answer.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good question. I got it.
Fans, if you're listening to this on the audio version, on the download version later on, feel free to send us your questions via our Twitter account at TFYLP or on our Facebook group, or you can shoot Paul a message on Twitter directly at for Paul Eiding.
That's the number four.
Yep. Yeah, the number four.
Just remember, Paul, if you decide that you just want to, you've thought about this question and you want to answer, get a hold of Duran anytime. Any episode, we'll pop you back in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if we're in the middle of a conversation. If you just pop back in and go, the number four, and you pop back out, it doesn't matter. We know that's your answer for that question.
You're always welcome on this show. And,
okay, here's the answer will not be this. My question will not be this. Okay, I know I'm wonderful. Now, what do you think of it? I won't ask that because that opens up too many cans of worms.
All I can say is if you're going to start off by that, let us know so we can do a whole segment on it. All right, give you enough time. Danger, you know, danger. To do it right.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, Will Robinson.
All right, guys.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, listeners, for Rick Alvarez, for Brett, and for Jim Black. We will see you next time on Transformers for your listening pleasure. This has been Duran Land. See you next time, next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.